If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Captain!
Car here.
Captain!
Report.
Signatures detected.
Shields up.
Signatures detected.
Red alert.
Context Starfleet Command.
What's happening?
Context Starfleet Command.
Delay that order.
Context Starfleet Command.
This is the captain.
Context Starfleet Command.
Get out of my chair.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Klingons.
Welcome to The Greatest Discovery. It's a new Star Trek podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
It's a special episode today. It's an episode that is looking directly at a mainline Greatest Gen episode.
Yeah, do you hear that out there? Those people chanting outside our houses, begging us to do this episode?
Yeah.
They heard that episode of Greatest Generation. They insisted that this happen.
I'm stepping out onto my front porch right now. I'm addressing the assembled people, and I'm saying, people of Reddit, lay down your keyboards. We have heard you.
Yeah, we love our listeners.
They keep multiplying, Ben, and that's the same problem that happens in this episode, right?
Oh, good point.
Whew. Yeah, that's what I do.
That's my tribble. You hear my tribble?
Your tribble doesn't like Klingons.
Yeah, I guess I'm a Klingon.
Have you been Ash Tylered?
I guess so.
Have you had two dicks this whole time?
Hold on, let me check. This is the tribble that comes out on tour with us. Somebody gave it to us, and
that's right. It's the tour tribble.
We always put it up on our stage table.
Yeah.
The table that we sit at while we are attempting to entertain people.
Our growing table menagerie.
Yeah.
So while we were watching the Deep Space Nine episode, it became clear that there was some source material that we might want to familiarize ourselves with.
Mm-hmm.
That coming in the form of this episode of the original series, which is many people's favorite.
This is definitely one of the iconic original series episodes. Is it the first episode that Klingons appear in?
Sure seems that way because they can't seem to decide how to pronounce that word, and I am reluctant to criticize anyone's pronunciation of anything.
Yeah.
However, they don't appear to know whether or not they are known as Klingons or Klingons.
Right.
A word that will be decided upon later, I guess.
They also claim to speak Klingoni.
Yeah.
Day of the Dove? Is that the first appearance of them?
Errand of Mercy is the 26th episode of the first season of Star Trek. It was the first episode in which the Klingons appeared.
I think that they are in less offensive like makeup in this episode than they are in that, because I'm looking at a picture on Wikipedia and it is real rough.
Yeah, their only distinguishing characteristic in this episode is the goatee, and that's a goatee that does go through an evolution, it would seem, throughout the original series.
It's crazy how in TOS and in a lot of TNG also, like, there are aliens that are just like bone stock humans that don't have any like anything to distinguish them from humans at all.
Right.
And nobody ever goes like, wow, isn't this fucking crazy that like you arose and evolved on this planet
light years from the planet that we arose and evolved on, and yet they're like indistinguishable from us. So much so that Kirk can fuck all of you.
This is what normalization is, right? The longer you go without talking about the thing that everyone recognizes is a little fucked up, the greater the chance that that thing is just recognized as being a normal way things are.
Yeah.
No one questions that the Klingons look exactly like humans, except they have goatees. And as a viewer, I think you come around to accepting that fact fairly quickly. It is a technology that works.
Yeah. I think what these characters could use is somebody on Twitter reminding them that this is not normal.
Just as this episode is not normal, Ben. It's a very special episode of The Greatest Discovery. Let's get into it. Let's talk about the original series, Season 2, Episode 13, The Trouble with Tribbles.
So they're headed to Station K7. There's talk of some kind of Starfleet colonization push. I guess they've gotten a priority one distress signal from K7, so they're concerned that there may be some Klingon stuff happening. They're sitting around with Chekhov in this opening scene, and Chekhov says that they're close enough to smell the Klingons, which Spock takes great umbrage with.
I was making a little joke, sir.
Chekhov's posture tells me that they are not doing that elementary school style scoliosis testing that I know I experienced growing up. I don't know if you got that at your private tennis academy, but they would line us up by the hundreds, and then they would make us bend over, and they would look at our backs to see if they were fucked up. Did you ever get that treatment?
No.
Wow, this must have been just a public school thing that kids who grew up in the 80s went through.
I never went to a public school.
And that's why your back's all fucked up.
Yeah, look at me now. World-class education, and here I am yelling at you about Star Trek on the internet.
With the way that Kirk, you know, like asks questions of his assembled crew like they're an Alexa computer, you'd think he would order Chekhov to sit up straight at some point.
It's a very informal ship. Kirk just like in that wraparound tunic uniform.
Looking very great. Yeah. Looking good and green, I would say.
Yeah, he's a handsome devil.
They're discussing this planet known as Sherman's Planet, and the idea that both the Federation and the Klingons have a claim on it. But as they're chopping up the dispute at this meeting, they receive a distress call from the orbiting station K7, and they haul ass out there because whenever you receive a priority one distress call, you know what to do. You got to read those priority one messages.
Yeah, and then get your money.
Right.
So, I guess they're probably just excited about getting $50 or whatever.
Yeah.
So they really step on it. And when they get there, they find that the station does not appear to be under attack in any way. Kirk is on the radio with Mr. Lurie, who issued the distress call. And the concern was like, yeah, we're just worried that some Klingons might do something about all this great grain we've got here.
Kirk is pissed off like a 911 operator would be at a kid who calls and hangs up.
Right.
Like, he's just totally... he's crazy about this. You don't just priority one message, kid.
I love how much Kirk holds the grudge in this episode, too.
The entire 50 minutes of the episode.
Any opportunity he gets to insult this guy, he fucking takes.
Yeah. Yeah, the station manager, Lurie, which is aptly named, I would say, right? In the sense that he has lured the entrepreneur to the station.
Yeah, I guess it's Barriss that he hates more. Like Lurie, he kind of thinks is an idiot, but he's like the older guy in the orange that allowed the priority one message to be sent, and then it's Barriss, the one that Kirk drags all the time.
It's that question of like between the customer and the client, who's actually the boss? Like
right.
Lurie's the station manager, but his client is Nils, and he's the guy in charge of the agribusiness. And he's the one who ordered the distress call.
The precious cargo that they want to preserve is called Quadro Triticale, which is the only grain that is capable of being grown on this planet. We get to look at this a couple of times, and it's like blue bulgur wheat.
Right. If you're a celiac person, you want to steer clear of Sherman's Planet.
Oh yeah.
They do not have any gluten-free menus.
It's a nightmare for people like that.
Yeah. Niles introduces his attaché, Arne Darvin, who we know from the Deep Space Nine episode, who didn't strike me at the time, but definitely strikes me now as a man who has been dressing at the same place where Pee-wee Herman gets his clothing. He's got that shiny gray suit.
Yeah, he's got like the Nehru jacket version of Pee-wee's suit, I would say.
Yeah. So Niles is making the case that safeguarding this grain is of such importance that the entrepreneur's job should be to do that. And Kirk is irritated at the idea that he and his great ship are given such a pedestrian job.
Yeah. I don't think he has like much choice in the matter, but he basically is like, I'm going to do the bare minimum to comply with what's being asked of me here and no more.
It's a form of passive aggression that I can really get behind.
Yeah, it's like anytime, you know, we have some work to divide up on this show and something is asked of you.
Right. And I'm going to be busy with those other things.
Yeah.
At those moments.
So they beam down two security guards to look after the tons and tons of grain that are currently being stored on Deep Space Station K7.
Kirk needs a place to seethe. He's not feeling great about his circumstances. And what's the best place to do your seething, Ben? It's the bar.
Yeah.
Obviously. And it's in the bar where we meet Cyrano Jones.
Yeah.
Who's the merchant who is doing that irritating thing of soliciting to you not at your doorstep, but at your actual workplace.
Right.
This is why you don't do bits on tips. The bartender here is a captive audience who cannot escape.
Yeah, it reminded me a little bit of when I spent a short amount of time in the liquor business and would occasionally go like rep a product at a liquor store, and I was very much a dilettante at this and not well suited to the like salesman aspects of it. But occasionally I would be at a liquor store while there would be another like real like brand rep from a real liquor company trying to sell something. And that's kind of the vibes I got from Cyrano Jones. Like yeah. The idea that you just like walk into a retail place and say like, hey, I've got some products and they should be on your shelves. Let me show them to you.
Pretty rough stuff this bartender's going through. He doesn't have a good episode, I would say.
No.
He's fairly bedraggled throughout.
Uhura and Chekhov are hanging out at the bar and kind of amusedly observing this when Cyrano Jones pulls a fuzzy little ball of joy out of one of the many cargo pockets on his ridiculous outfit. I saw this guy in the DS9 episode, but I didn't really make the connection that he is what Odo and Worf were dressed up as.
Yeah.
I don't know why it didn't occur to me, but obviously, like, this is, like, the look of a certain kind of, like, random item salesman.
Yeah, when you're in the business, this is your uniform.
Yeah.
He pulls out this furry boutonniere, and Uhura just falls right in love with it.
She loves this thing.
May I hold it?
Ben, what if you could have a cat, but none of the downsides? That's the answer the Tribble provides, right?
Yeah, I mean, our Tribble that we take out on tour, I do have to like brush every couple of days just to kind of keep the hairball issue at bay.
Yeah.
But other than that, I don't have to do anything.
Yeah, it can ride under the seat in front of you in an airplane.
Yeah.
Totally not disruptive or stinky.
It's a little embarrassing when the TSA finds it in your luggage, but...
Yeah, but the TSA are full of Klingons.
It's only embarrassing for the reason that it reacts badly to their presence.
Right. Fucking Chekhov is that guy at the bar that, like, eats the shelled peanuts and then, like, tosses his nuts onto the surface of the bar instead of the floor. Like, he totally spills his grain all over the surface of the bar next to him and doesn't even clean up after himself.
Yeah. Come on.
What the
Come
fuck, Chekhov? Stand up straight and clean up your mess.
He's the Forrest Gump of Star Trek.
Slouch, Forrest, slouch!
That's Uhura.
Yeah, yep.
In the bar fight scene, and it turns out to be super adaptive because he's always ducking people's punches. Slouch, Chekhov! So the deal is cut where the bartender is going to buy a dozen tribbles from this guy, but he gives this is his salesman sample, and he gives that to Uhura just to be a super nice dude. Meanwhile, up on the Entrepreneur, Kirk is getting orders from Starfleet HQ that, Undersecretary Barris's orders are the orders. He's going to have to devote a lot more of the Entrepreneur's resources to protecting this grain from potential Klingon incursion.
The mission pivots from grain protection to Klingon defense almost immediately.
Yeah, like they get this call, and then suddenly D7 is inbound.
Which I think is great for Kirk, right? He would not be happy to be babysitting grain. He wants Klingons to fight.
Yeah, yeah.
Because after all, he's never trusted Klingons, and he never will.
Not after the death of his boy.
Yeah, he cannot forgive them for this stupid grain defense mission.
Yeah. So he runs up to the bridge. I don't know if you noticed this, but he takes a real long route around the bridge to get to his chair. Like, he definitely goes further than he needs to. But radioing up to the station, they decide, I guess the Klingons have just arrived in Lurie's office.
Yeah, and I think that observation about Kirk's path to his chair is important because that's the time that it took for Lurie to invite Koloth and Korax into his office to take the meeting.
Right.
Like, it happens instantly.
Yeah. If Kirk had been a little bit quicker, he might have been able to prevent this whole thing.
Right.
Kirk and Koloth seem to know each other.
Ah, my dear Captain Kirk.
My dear Captain Koloth.
It's how I greet a friend.
That's interesting to hear, because you've definitely never greeted me that way.
Indeed.
Hmm. Same guy that plays Koloth in Deep Space Nine?
Yeah. That's fun.
Young, handsome.
Yeah, virile.
Great big crank.
These Klingons are just humans with goatees, and they're on shore leave.
Yeah.
They take great pains to mention that they are of no threat. They're just there to have a good time and have a couple beverages at the bar.
Yeah, and they kind of cite chapter and verse of treaties that enable them to utilize this space station for shore leave. And so nobody's really in a position to say no to them.
And Kirk, being the master of treaties, understands that that he can enact a sort of policy where he matches one for one the number of Klingons to Federation guards on the station. And so he does that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, and that's a nice idea, except for it doesn't seem to actually have any practical ramifications, because when we start to see Klingons on the station, it's not like there are six Klingons in the bar and also six armed police. It's there are six Klingons in the bar, and presumably somewhere else on the station, there are also six armed police.
This is another way in which it becomes a very bad day for the bartender, because he didn't staff the bar expecting this number of patrons.
Right.
Had he known, I think he would have more service there.
Yeah, it's like a Wednesday night that somehow got super bumping and he wishes he had a doorman.
Yeah. It's tough. He can barely keep up.
It's very challenging.
We cut to the rec room, and Uhura's tribble has birthed a whole litter of tribbles. And there are so many that McCoy feels emboldened to ask if he can take one away and study it.
Yeah.
And Uhura's like, sure, I'm not attached to any of these.
Yeah, go ahead. Cut it open. See if I care. There are enough that basically anybody that's in the room is given one as a gift. It's the cardboard box full of kittens at the grocery store.
Would you say the A and the B story are equivalent here? And I guess by A story, I'm going to talk about grain protection, and the B story, the idea of these tribbles. Or would you say those are reversed? Or, like, is one more important or less important, or are they equal to each other? I feel like there's an equivalence here.
Well, Adam, the episode is not called The Trouble with Triticale.
Hmm, there's the answer. Anytime you can earn yourself the title of the episode,
yeah,
you can be assured that you are the A story.
I'm trying to get A story status every time we record this podcast, yeah. And I rarely get it. So there's like a lot of stuff that is going to happen. The the doctor is going to start to study Tribbles. Kirk is very cranky about all the security that he's got to do. And, you know, the station is starting to fill up. There are Klingons, there are officers from the Entrepreneur on shore leave. A lot of them wind up finding themselves in the bar. And that's when Korax starts to kind of pick fights. He's looking to instigate a bar fight. And so he just kind of walks around the bar talking smack about Kirk for, you know, at great length. And Chekhov is like really, really interested in taking him up on the fight that he's clearly spoiling for. But Scotty has been given orders by the captain to do everything he can to prevent any funny business like that.
You can understand why Korax is so upset. It's taken forever to get a drink at this bar.
Yeah, it's like I can get sold a Tribble before I get the fucking drink I ordered? What the hell?
It's a scene where you learn how Scotty can get Marty McFly'd by someone.
Yeah.
Because all you need to do is insult the great ship Entrepreneur. And that's what it takes to get the nine fingers of fury all up in your grill.
Yeah.
Because Scotty throws the first punch.
Yeah. This is like, I thought a lot about in this scene the idea of them George Lucasing this episode. Like CBS or whatever.
Right.
Like putting some Deep Space Nine characters, like putting them in the TOS episode.
Right.
Like they were always there, which I kind of think would be fun, right? Like just have O'Brien in the background throwing some punches also.
I'm with you. Like, I think it would be cute and interesting, but I get the sense that the people who really like original series Star Trek would hate that.
Yeah, but I like. Wouldn't it be fun to also kind of stick it to them?
I mean, evangelical original series Star Trek fans are some of the most annoying Star Trek fans there are.
Right.
And so, of course, I would be interested in tweaking their nipples over this. But you're right. It is an interesting thought exercise, like how if they ever thought of doing that and how close they came if they did.
Yeah, I don't know. This would have been a fun scene to leave some of that stuff in, but
Did you peep the Klingon with the Larry David haircut in this fight?
Yeah.
I love that guy.
That's the one that Chekhov goes up against and punches in the gut like six times, right?
He's great.
Chekhov real bent over even when he's fighting.
Yeah. He's like, is that Blanka from Street Fighter 2? The guy that electrocutes himself. Yeah. He kind of fights like him.
Yeah. This fight scene also has a lot more visual gags related to Cyrano Jones than I think I realized in the DS9 version. Like Cyrano Jones walks in and like is offering tribbles to people, offers another tribble to the bartender, and the bartender starts pulling tribbles out and like really making a big show of how many tribbles are present at the bar.
Were you surprised that at no point was a tribble ever used for anything but as a pet?
Like, yeah, they don't go flying.
I thought for sure one or several would get thrown in the bar melee, or that the bartender would use a tribble to clean up a spill or something. Like, how absorbent is a tribble is a question that I had that will go unanswered, I think.
Yeah, or like have a Klingon grab a guy by the belt and the collar of his shirt and like run him into a wall, and the guy puts a tribble in between his head and the wall right at the last minute to soften the impact.
Or a Klingon punches a human in the stomach, and the human is like, oh, with his mouth all wide, and then the Klingon crams a little tribble into his mouth, and he's like, you know, stuff like that.
Somebody does like an end zone celebration with a tribble, like dunks it into the ground, and then does a little dance.
like a great big unit like staggers around before falling backwards and then totally squishes a tribble. It's like stepping on a ketchup packet.
Yeah, this is what TOS needed was more gore.
I mentioned this in our episode, our iMud episode. Like, sometimes I think that TOS was meant to just be a funny show.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel the same. To that extent, it is, and it works.
Yeah.
I think before watching any TOS, I approached it seriously, and that was a big mistake. Because approaching it the way we have, I enjoy it a lot more than I thought I would.
Yeah, it's not trying to be the same thing that TNG was trying to be.
Right. Cyrano Jones drinks like 4 cocktails during this fight. Like the fight actually works out really well for Cyrano Jones.
Yeah. Cyrano Jones drinks 4 cocktails and also has a couple of broads just because he knows, you know, he's having a big night.
God, you could fit a couple of 100 packs in those pockets.
Yeah.
He's got room for broad. He's a broader, not a shower.
We get the scene where Kirk dresses down his men after the big fight. I am fascinated by the Chekhov, I know you.
Right.
What? Under what circumstance would your boss say, I know you?
I mean, we know that Chekhov wasn't in the entire original series, and I wonder how new he is to the show at this point in time.
Maybe, yeah. It was in iMud, which was like 7 episodes before this or something like that.
It's weird. It is. It does feel a little incongruent.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
No one's talking. Everyone's covering for each other the way that a middle school fight would go. You don't want to be the rat.
Yeah. So they're all going to have to do some time in confined to quarters duty. But Scotty, once everybody else leaves, kind of confesses to having been the one to start the fight. And it's played for comedy, this whole scene where he's like explaining like, well, they were like saying some real mean shit about you. And I managed to like keep everybody from fighting while that was happening. But then, then they insulted the ship and that really set me off.
In Six Bay, the tribbles have multiplied, and Spock and McCoy are debating the merits of tribble affection in a pretty fun way.
Yeah.
Spock's not a cat person.
Right.
I think that's what we're able to derive from this conversation.
Yeah. I don't think he's a dog person either.
No.
He's like a fish person.
It takes a village to make a fish man.
I love all the scenes of McCoy studying the tribbles.
Yeah.
I think they're my favorite parts of this episode.
I love that big, like, clear cylindrical container.
Yeah, what is it, the cake case?
Yeah, I want that.
Yeah.
I don't know what I would do with it, but I want it.
On the bridge, Kirk sits down on a whoopee tribble and observes that the tribbles are all over the bridge stations. They're just everywhere and on the walls.
Yeah, this is a scene where in Deep Space Nine, like he looks over and Dax is standing there and it looks like they make eye contact. And I was really surprised that they didn't have a character there that they'd painted out in Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, their ability to make that look work on Deep Space Nine is amazing when you see the original.
Yeah, like they kind of made it a different thing than it was.
McCoy enters and his description of the Tribbles is folksy and hilarious. This is some real chicken fried Dr. McCoy hilariousness here, and I just love it.
Yeah, Spock is really starting to get annoyed with this. He's like, all they do is eat and reproduce, and they don't give anything back. And Uhura's like, well, at least they don't shit. Like, we don't have to clean up after them. That's nice.
Spock describes the tribble situation as a real failure to launch. All they do is sit around and consume. When are they going to get a job, Spock says.
It's starting to become a big problem that these things are just everywhere.
Yeah, and so Kirk wants Cyrano Jones arrested and the Tribbles rounded up. He wants to put them in camps, Ben.
Yeah.
Tribble camps.
Spock kind of dresses Cyrano Jones down about what a foolish idea it was to remove Tribbles from their predator-filled environment.
I wanted so bad the cut to Planet Tribble. the natural environment and the predator stalking its prey there.
Yeah, the case that is made basically is that tribbles just eat and reproduce. Like, baby tribbles are essentially what tribbles do to shit.
Yeah.
Like, all they do is convert matter into more tribbles.
Right.
But that must just be like paradise for the wolves of Planet Tribble, right? They just walk around eating all the time.
The wolves of Planet Tribble have got to be really fat fucks. Like, there's no end to the amount of tribbles to eat.
They are gorging themselves.
Yeah. When Kirk and Spock interrogate Cyrano Jones, he doesn't see anything wrong with what he's done. And this is an irritation to both Kirk and Spock. And then Cyrano leaves, a free man. Like, he's not detained.
Yeah.
They detained him briefly to ask him questions, and then he goes. But he does that thing where as soon as he leaves, Barris walks in and confronts Kirk with his suspicion that he's actually a Klingon agent.
Yeah, Barris is pointing the finger at Cyrano Jones and right. is ripshit at Kirk at this point. You know, both because Kirk has insulted him a bunch of times, but also because he thinks that Kirk is kind of allowing this awful Klingon plot to go down right under his nose. And Spock is like, well, listen, like, there's no evidence that Cyrano Jones broke the law. So, you know, our hands are kind of tied here.
It's a real predicament. And what Kirk needs more than anything is a meal to think things over.
Not going to have the meal on the station, though. He heads back to the ship where the food dispenser spit out plates of tribbles.
He was expecting to have the Popeye's chicken sandwich, which he had heard is really great.
Oh, yeah.
But instead, he gets a tray of fur.
Yeah.
What kind of fucked up meal order is a chicken sandwich and coffee?
Yeah, that doesn't sound good.
I mean, I know you don't like it because it's a sandwich, but...
I like a fried chicken sandwich.
But would you ever have it with coffee? I don't think I would.
I don't think I would either.
Even an iced coffee, I wouldn't pair with a fried chicken sandwich.
Yeah. It's one of those things, like In-N-Out Burger added hot chocolate to their menu, and it's like the first thing they've added in a really, really long time.
But why?
It's like, who is getting hot chocolate with a burger?
Can you get it animal style with a bunch of both cooked and uncooked marshmallows in it?
Yeah, and Thousand Island.
Kirk's tray is an alarming sign that no one is wearing hairnets where the food is being processed on the Entrepreneur.
Yeah. Yeah. That's somebody should go down to the galley and shoot all of the mashed potato pots.
Yeah, take back all the food handlers' permits from those guys.
So they had this kind of puts Kirk onto like what is causing these tribbles to reproduce. They're eating at them. So they head to the station. They go to like open the silos full of grain. And we get the famous, hilarious scene where they just come dumping out onto Kirk's head as he leans it in so that they can dump on him more.
Yeah.
Rather than taking a step back.
He kind of motorboats those tribbles as they come down.
Yeah, yeah. It's like...
it's a real hairy motorboat situation.
Tribble all over my face kind of situation.
He's like picking up a tribble and like slapping it against his cheek. He's doing all the things.
He loves it.
Yeah.
He acts like it's grossing him out, but he loves that shit.
Oh, the grain compartment is just thick with these things.
Yeah. Yeah. And he goes, num, num. Give me those tribbles.
Barris is 60s pissed at this scene because all of his grain has been eaten.
Yep. No more grain.
He's ruined.
Yeah. He's ruined the colonization efforts for Sherman's planet are totally derailed. This is a fucking catastrophe.
His anger is kind of mid-Atlantic adjacent, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. He's mid-Atlantic mad for sure. They start to realize though that a lot of these tribbles, they dead.
Which is so gross.
Yeah. Makes it even grosser what Kirk did when they started tumbling out.
Yeah, Kirk is standing in a dead tribble graveyard, and you can be sure these tribbles are going to hell.
Yeah. he doesn't know, but we do know, is that Sisko and Dax are up there in the silo looking for the bomb Tribble.
Right, which means they're up there with a bunch of dead Tribbles too.
Yeah.
They're throwing dead Tribbles at Kirk's face.
Yeah, and Dax is like, when you entered this silo, did you see a sign that said dead Tribble storage? Because storing dead Tribbles ain't my fucking business.
I know my chicken sandwich is good. I buy the good stuff.
If I let my ankylosaur buy the chicken sandwich, she gets the cheap garbage.
I'm not here to talk about the fucking grain bearers. I'm here to talk about the dead Tribbles on my station.
Dorks. Kirk and Spock look like a couple of dorks.
Yeah. So they meet up with Koloth in Lurie's office. This is Kirk and Spock. And Koloth asks that the Tribbles be removed from their meeting. This McLaughlin group...
Issue one.
...is one of those meetings where you've got your Eleanor Clift, you've got your Pat Buchanan, you got Clarence Page. Not invited are any Tribbles at all.
Yeah.
And it's upon removing the Tribbles from the scene that the big reveal takes place.
Cyrano Jones has got like arms full of them, and as the two security men are walking out, Iron Darvin walks in, and the Tribbles react as though he is a Klingon.
Yeah, he's been outed as an Ash Tyler.
Yeah, Kirk grabs a Tribble and kind of like goes around and holds the Tribbles up to everyone in the room, and they like the humans, they like the Vulcan, they do not like the Klingons, and they do not like Iron Darvin.
Do you think that tearing a Tribble open is a feat of strength, like ripping a phone book in half? Like, do you think you could do it?
My dog got a hold of our stage Tribble one time and put some rips in it.
Oh, no.
Yeah. It's okay. It's going to live, but...
Based on that information, I feel like you could rip a Tribble in two.
Yeah. It would have been nice to see somebody do this.
It's really all I want to see. Let's see some more of that grape jelly.
Unlike Ash Tyler, though, Arn Darvin is detectable by tricorder. So I guess maybe the tricorder technology has come quite a ways since the days of Discovery.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And I guess that does make sense, right? Like the Federation would be interested in making sure that an Ash Tyler type situation does not catch them with their pants down again.
Yeah.
It's a real fool me once, shame on you kind of situation.
Yeah, it sure is. So that hangs together.
Yeah.
As an overarching story.
But Bones also has some news that the Quadro Triticale had a virus in it. And so, hence all the dead Tribbles. and that would have really fucked the colony up. So this whole Arn Darvin scheme was, in fact, to supply this new Federation colony with poison grain. And the Tribbles, in a lot of ways, foiled the plot.
The Tribbles are the heroes of the day.
Yeah. They detected the bad guy and stopped his evil plan.
We can't forget that.
Basically, the Starfleets didn't do shit.
There's that scene at the end of the episode where they give medals to all the Tribbles, only because the Tribbles don't have necks. The ribbons just like fall to the ground.
Chewbacca is there, and like you kind of get the sense that he identifies with the Tribbles,
sure,
because they're also furry like him. Yeah. But for some reason, again, he does not get a medal.
God,
it's like, what the hell?
It's such an insult.
What does a Wookiee have to do to get a medal around here?
I don't know. We'll never know. Back at the K7 bar, Cyrano Jones's punishment is to pick up every one of the millions of Tribbles on the station. Or be the bartender's butler. Sort of an unorthodox method of punishment there.
It's going to take him 17.9 years to do it. And you can imagine that by the time he's picking up those last few Tribbles, they're going to be mighty smelly.
God.
Having all died from this Quadro Triticale virus.
What a terrible station to be assigned to, this K7 station. You do not want to go there. What is Cyrano Jones going to do with the Tribbles that he gathers? Like, there's like the button on the episode, the true button happens on the bridge where the ship gets underway and the ship is now Tribble free thanks to some quick thinking by Scotty. Scotty mentions that he has beamed the Tribbles onto the Klingon ship, specifically to their engine room. Here's the thing.
Yeah.
We know what happens to the Enterprise Tribbles. What happens to the K-7 Tribbles? Are they beamed into space? Are they shot with phasers? Are they incinerated? What happens there?
Are they all dead? And if so, why can't Cyrano Jones just beam them all into space?
Yeah, Cyrano Jones should be like using a push broom and an incinerator if they're all dead already.
Yeah. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
He could probably do the 17-year job in like 3 years if they're all dead.
Yeah. Did you like the episode, Adam?
Yeah, I think I did. And the reason was the same as before. Like, approaching this as a comedy makes it very enjoyable.
Yeah, it's fun.
I loved it quite a bit.
I liked it, too. I liked the set of the office where you could see the entrepreneur out the window.
Yeah,
like
that was
flying
big fun.
By. And at one point, they got on the view screen with the guy, and you could see the entrepreneur behind him on the view screen, which I think might be the only time I can think of in Star Trek where you could see the ship that the call is coming from in the shot.
All the remastered shots in TOS are beautiful and awesome.
Yeah.
And I really love them.
How'd they get everybody's hair looking so shiny?
I don't know.
You could like see your reflection in Spock's hair.
I mean, I don't think they had pert in the 60s.
Yeah, they had something though.
They're definitely not using 2-in-1 shampoos.
No.
In the 60s, they're just using asbestos, right? It's just really bad stuff.
Yeah, that's the best way to maintain your hair.
The best way to maintain the production of our show is the reading of Priority One messages. Ben, you want to check those out?
I do like a Priority One message.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Our first Priority One message, first and only Priority One message.
This Priority One message stands alone.
It's from Mock, son of Kevin, and is for Christar Shrimp Kolgar.
What would the greatest discovery do without this gang?
Christar Shrimp Kolgar being buried under Priority One messages. He's worth thousands at this point,
yeah.
Clearly. Message goes like this. Christar, I will help restore your house's honor at your wedding as a member of your Dust Buster Club. I am hoping there will be rich beef sausages or perhaps fifth meat at the reception.
Oh, wow. Man, Kern fears nothing. He'll talk about fifth meat openly.
Gotta get that caviar at the reception, Shrimp.
Oh, shit.
I mean, that's the kind of seafood that you should probably have there. I'm sure with a nickname like Shrimp, one might expect that flavor. But break out the beluga.
Damn.
Spread it all over that turkey. We've all had turkey and caviar at wedding receptions.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say turkey with caviar on it might be what they're talking about when they talk about fifth meat.
Fifth meat, second dinner. That's what a wedding reception is also.
Yeah.
Everyone's already eaten by then. Don't make the mistake of going to a wedding having not eaten. That's my advice.
My wife passed out at a wedding one time because she had like 2 glasses of wine after not eating.
No one's asking you to load up.
Yeah.
Have a snack and don't go in there hungry.
Just maintain.
Mistakes can happen that way.
Yeah.
Well, one thing that's never a mistake is the writing and reading of a Priority One message. You can make that possible by going to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where personal messages are $100 and commercial messages are $200, both of which help with the ongoing production of The Greatest Discovery.
They sure do. Thanks a lot.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you discover yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible!
Drunk Shimoda!
I'm going to give it to Cyrano Jones. I think that he is fitting the description for me of the character that is having the most fun and inserting the most chaos into the episode.
That's a great pick.
He is comic relief in a pretty funny episode. Like, all his...
The reason for all this.
All his hijinks in the bar, like the idea of a bar fight breaks out and your first thought is, I'm going to steal some drinks. It's very funny to me. Very drunk Shimoda move.
He doesn't go full mud either. Like, he's not totally silly. He's just a little silly.
Yeah, and he's also not, like, he's not totally evil in the way that mud always is revealed to be.
He's salesman silly the way a salesperson needs to be charming. He's like that, you know?
What about you? Did you have a drunk Shimoda?
In the scene in the rec room where Uhura has like gathered her assembled and multiplied tribbles on the table,
mm-hmm.
like there's a bunch of other Starfleets in there, and they're all petting them together, and they're sort of falling in love with these things. There's an ensign. I have learned this is Ensign Freeman sitting next to Uhura, and he's wearing a gold uniform. He asks Uhura at the end of the scene if he can have one. Uhura says yes, and then the one that he takes is not the one that he's been playing with, but it's instead the tribble that the lady next to him has bonded with. Did you notice this?
I did not notice that, but that's very funny.
It is a super subtle bit of physical comedy that it's like in the corner of the frame. It is not even something that I think most people are supposed to pay attention to. But that choice by him to not take his tribble but to take someone else's, I thought was awesome. And so Ensign Freeman is my drunk Shimoda for that.
Wow, that's great. Good pick, Adam. Well, once again... no idea what our next episode is going to be, but I know that there are some Star Trek Discovery comics coming out. So those are for sure going to be covered by us soon here on The Greatest Discovery. But
we cover it all.
Check back in a couple weeks, and there'll be another great, great episode of The Greatest Discovery.
Take it away, Rorbs.
The Greatest Discovery is a Maximum Fun podcast hosted by Benjamin Harrison and Adam Pranica. It's produced by me, Rob Schulte. Our theme music is by Friend of DeSoto and YouTube sensation Adam Ragusea. The Greatest Discovery is made possible by the support of our listeners like you. Make sure the show continues by going to MaximumFun.org/donate. If you'd like to discuss the show online, please use the hashtag GreatestDiscovery. You can find Ben on Twitter at BenjaminAHR, Adam is at CutForTime, and I'm at Rob K. Schulte. Thanks, we'll see you on the next episode of The Greatest Discovery.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.